to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show.
Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn from the Creative Pen Podcast. And today I'm interviewing Philippa Ballantyne. Philippa is an award-winning author and podcaster from New Zealand. She primarily writes fantasy novels and her latest book, Geist, has just been released from Ace Books. So welcome, Pip.
It's wonderful to be here through the magic of Skype.
It is. So congratulations on your book. Maybe you could start by telling us a bit about Geist and the series Books of the Order.
Okay, it's coming out with Ace Books. It's out now, and it's a supernatural fantasy set in a world in which the paranormal is just a given. There are possessions and evil things happen, and people take it as read that the geists exist. And there are this order of deacons who used to be a religious order but are now dedicated to protecting the Joe Blogs on the streets from the awful incursions of these paranormal creatures. It's a two-book deal with Ace. So there's Geist and there's Spectre, which is coming out, I think, in July next year. And I'm hoping for a few more books in the series, but it's at least two.
Maybe you could, at the moment, it's obviously NaNoWriMo. Maybe you could talk a bit about why you love fantasy. Why do you write in fantasy?
Well, fantasy and I go a long way back to when I was a wee kid getting read Lord of the Rings by my dad as a bedtime story. And I've always loved the sheer scope of it. Basically, if you can imagine it, then it can be. So there are no real boundaries like there are in many other genres. And I just, you know, you can be on a planet at the outer rim of the universe, or you can be in an alternate history where Shakespeare met the fairies. So it's just brilliant the way that you can do anything you like within the scope of fantasy. That's why I love it so much.
No, that's fantastic. So as I said, it's NaNoWriMo this month. It's November as we're recording this. Maybe you could share some of your top tips. So maybe three of your top tips for getting that first draft down, as you're obviously doing lots of that at the moment.
Yeah, I'm working on several things at the moment. But I think for getting the words out, you've got to learn to just keep writing and not look back. When I was first starting writing my first novel, I was stuck in the whole thing where you look back and you edit and then you write a few more words and you go back and edit. And I think especially for NaNo, you just have to keep powering forward and not worry about how polished things are. Just keep going forward. I also, one of my other favorite things to do is to include something about that includes the senses, either a smell or a colour or a sound. And those are really evocative, and I think it helps the reader get inside the head of the person that they're supposed to be empathising with in the story. And the characters, of course, are the lens through which the readers experience the story. So you've got to create vivid characters, and I think one of the ways you do that is you realise that characters don't have to be perfect. In fact, it's better to have an imperfect character because then people can empathize so much more with them. So those are my tips.
That's fantastic. And I guess following on from that, maybe you could tell us a bit more about your main character, Sorsha. Sorsha.
Sorsha is a very powerful character in the Geist universe. She has a lot of power, but she doesn't have a lot of control. And she starts off in the story a little bit arrogant because she's been basically raised from childhood to be this sort of protective character. So she gets into situations in which she thinks she knows everything and people should just obey her. It would go so much more smoothly if they listened to her. And I think her character arc through the book is her learning that no, she isn't the be-all and end-all, and she meets a couple of characters along the way that help her work out that diplomacy and kindness also work rather nicely together. So it's interesting to see when, as I'm working on Spectre, which is the second book, the changes that have occurred in her. So
fantastic. Okay, so I'm asking this of authors at the moment because I find it so interesting. You know, you talked a bit about your background with fantasy, but what are the things that feed your imagination that create these characters? So you've written about a lot of supernatural, you know, with Weatherchild, you had the sort of New Zealand weather, I suppose, and, you know, and then you had Shakespeare in England. So what are the things that really feed your imagination?
Well, I've always said that one of my favourite sources of inspiration has been history. I studied history at university and I just find it fascinating. I love the History Channel, I love history books, and I find a lot of, not necessarily, except for the Shakespeare, but I don't necessarily pull them straight out and use them. But an example, Geist, is sort of based on the Tsarist Russia of the 19th century, and it gives a nice sort of anchor point of realism to go from, and then you can build the fantastical elements around it. But then I also love people. I love just the people that you have in your day-to-day existence. You don't necessarily pull them and make them into the story so no one gets too worried. I will say I don't do that. But just the way people are and the way they behave in certain situations, and you know, you hear a lot of inspirational stories about people being courageous and brave and all of that sort of thing. So, yeah, just people watching is one of my favourite activities.
So does that mean you read a lot of non-fiction history books?
I try to.
In your spare time?
At the moment, in my copious amounts of spare time, I try to read outside the genre. I like, I'm also fond of mysteries and obviously historical fiction books as well. But yes, I have a pile of history books that I have yet to read, and I keep looking at them rather longingly.
No, fantastic. Now, I've been keeping up with your Twitter stream, and I notice you've moved countries. You've got how many books on the go, and you're very busy. So one of you know, the other question is, I guess, now you've given up the your old day job as a librarian.
Yes. Terrifying.
What is the life like as a full-time author?
Well, I think I'm starting to get the hang of it now. When I first quit the day job and went full time, it was a little bit like, yay, I don't have to do anything. I could just sit around and, you know, no. In fact, I started to realize the other day, you know, when I worked a full time day job, I actually had a weekend. You know, I had a I had a break. And instead, I find myself these days kind of doing what most people would call work during the weekend as well. So I'm trying to make a bit of an effort to balance things out a little bit. But with the first book coming out with Ace, I realized that these few months around the release date are very important, and that I had to kind of put my nose to the grindstone and really put some effort into getting it marketed and a good release, and basically just getting the word out about the book, which is the most important thing, really. So,
and maybe you could, you know, dispel a few rumours or myths or whatever. So do publishers actually help you with any marketing? And what did your publisher do for you? Or are you doing everything yourself?
Well, I have to say that coming from an independent press has served me very, very well, because I think if I was a debut author who had no experience with any publishing, that I would have probably freaked out. And also been not disappointed, but, you know, not knowing what exactly the publishing houses do. Ace have done things like they did postcards and they took them to places like Comic-Con and a few other big conventions, which they can do, which independent houses can't. So that's good. And they also supply a lot of advanced reader copies and also review copies now. For blogs and the big like Locus, Publishers Weekly, places like that. So they do those sort of things. And I sort of decided that I was going to do my own thing. So I put together a little marketing plan and sent it to them, and they were all on board with it. So I've been the complete list. I would probably be here for a while, but I have done. I'm doing a blog tour, a podcast tour. I am podcasting short stories set in the world. T. Morris helped me put together a very nice video trailer. I'm doing competitions, and I'm filling up my blog for the Geist novels with all sorts of stuff about the paranormal and the supernatural to get people interested in the book. So yes, I feel like I've at least given it a good try. So, you know,
yeah,
it appears from preliminary data that it's working well in the first week. So I would like to take credit for some of that.
Yes, and of course, having it out around Halloween was an excellent idea.
That was totally not my idea, but it was a very good thing for them to do.
Yeah.
And very clever, those marketing people.
Indeed. So, I guess that was the thing I was going to ask you is about work ethic, because clearly you're working, you know, long hours on doing the marketing, but also you're having to write. You've got a book coming out with T next year, I think, and you've got the next one in the series, and I imagine you're having to do all kinds of other writing. So is that work ethic what has got you from being, you know, I guess nowhere to somewhere?
I would say so. It all seems to be building like a snowball effect. It started off very small, like 13 years ago, and I never ever expected that I would be this year having three books released with two major New York houses. That's kind of crazy, but I'm going to just roll with it and hopefully make the most of it. Now I've lost my notes. The work ethic part of it has certainly kicked in the last couple of years. So I feel like it's starting to come together. But I also know that this year is a very important year for me, and that's why I'm sort of in the States. I'm going to hit the convention circuit, hopefully doing a convention a month, which is quite a lot, and as many book signings as I can get in, and basically, you know, spread myself around as much as possible, because, you know, you don't necessarily, well, you usually don't hit the New York Times with your first book. So it's building up the name for yourself that, so I'd say about, I see at the moment, I seem to be concentrating more on marketing than writing. But that being said, in the last month, T and I finished the edits for Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, Phoenix Rising, which is coming in May next year. And now I have until the 15th of November to get the edits of Spectre, the sequel to Geist, finished. So I can't hardly see through all the red ink that is I'm drowning in it at the moment. And I'm kind of looking forward to doing something new. And we've got the second book for the ministry to write. So.
Mm. Well, maybe you could comment on that as well, given that we might have some first-time, you know, novelists with Nano, you know, listening. You said they're drowning in red ink and about the editing process. Can you give us a view of the editing process?
Well, I remember my first professional edit, I cried. So once you get over that stage, you're usually doing better. I enjoy some parts of the editing process. I enjoy the part where it looks much better after you've done it. You know, when you're getting down to the nitty gritty of it, sometimes it can feel like you're never going to get anything, you know, finished, and it's never going to be any good. When you have somebody else commenting on your book, that I think that's when you really start to learn about it. But I always do the whole put the thing away for a little while and then come back to it, because I find if I try editing straight away, I'm too close to it and I can't really see the wood for the trees. If you kind of know what I mean, all the red ink flying. So, yeah, editing, you've got to be in the right sort of headspace to make it really work. And it does take what is essentially a rough diamond and polish it, I think. So, you know, it's worth it.
It's still your story, isn't it? That's what I think some people are afraid, that an editor will completely change their story.
No, a good editor should never, you know, take away your voice, which is essentially, you know, your thing, your style. What they usually, I like them when they find logic holes, or when the character sort of is acting out outside of their normal parameters or things like that. And, you know, you shouldn't be afraid of having a good editor, but a bad editor can be dangerous. So pick your editors and your beta readers with care, I guess, is the moral of that story.
Fantastic. Now, I'm also interested in the fact, you know, given that I'm in Australia and, you know, I've got a thriller novel coming out and I want to be pitching it, you know, and I'm going to come to New York next year and come to Thriller Fest and, you know, which is very exciting. But I'm interested in the fact that you've moved to America from New Zealand.
Well, it's not an official move yet. I have what they call a B1 business visa, which means you can't have an American job, but you can come here for marketing. So that's basically what I'm doing is book signings, meeting the agent, meeting the publisher, doing all of that sort of stuff falls under that category. And it was funny at American Customs, they were sort of, you know, they always look you over a bit suspiciously when you're staying for longer than, I think it's 3 months, the visa waiver. And they went, oh, so you've got a book coming out. And he looked at me very dubiously. And I said, yes, I have, actually. I've got it here. And I pulled it out. And he looked at the spine and he looked at my name and he looked at the spine and he went, oh, okay. And they let me in. So,
yeah,
you know.
And do you think this is, I mean, given, what am I trying to say? People who are serious about making it in America, is this what you have to do? You have to give up your job and go there and do this?
Well, it was okay in the fact that I don't really have a job anymore. Writing is it. So I don't necessarily think you have to do the whole 6-12 months thing, which I'm doing. Mainly because I'm doing it because I've got 3 books out this year. If it was just one, it would be a little different. But I do think you can you benefit from FaceTime with people, meeting your agent, meeting your publisher. And doing the circuit of conventions and book signings and things, it all helps. I've kind of learned that there is a network of people out there that you want to be in touch with. And I think social media is great, but it still doesn't replace the face-to-face experience of meeting people.
No, that's interesting. It's just very interesting for me seeing you do this and thinking that, hey, maybe that could be an excuse for me.
Well, apparently it is.
That's brilliant. Okay, so tell us, so you've mentioned a few things about what's coming up, but maybe you could just outline the books you've got coming up and what's next for Pip Ballantyne.
Oh, my goodness. So May 2011 is the book that I co-wrote with T. Morris, which is Ministry of Peculiar Occurrences, Phoenix Rising. And that is a steampunk romp with a New Zealand secret agent and a English librarian getting up to all sorts of mischief in Victorian London. Then in July will be Spectre, which is the sequel to Geist, and it's sort of the continuing adventures of Saoirse and company. And that's what can I say without giving it away? Oh, it's an interesting book. Set in a different part, she travels to a different part of the empire, so you get to see a sort of a desert community, and it's also about the position of gods within this world where the paranormal is just a given. Then after that, I think possibly March, May 2012 will be the second book of the Ministry series, which is tentatively titled Cogs and Corsets, where we're sort of mulling that one over. So those are all the books that I'm contracted for. We are sort of talking about a third book in the Geist series, which will be called Wraith, and I have plenty of plans for that. And then I have even vaguer plans about a YA title, which would be a sort of a, I guess they call it a biopunk, they're calling it, you know, post-apocalyptic YA title. And then even further back than that, I've got a steampunk erotica about 20,000 words written that's just sort of sitting there, and I fantasize about being able to actually finish that when I have a moment.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. And what's interesting about that, and that I want people to really get, is that you've got all these different things going on at the same time, which is the reality.
I don't want to... I don't want to say them because then I start freaking out. It's like going, oh my goodness.
but that is the I guess the secret of authors who are making a decent living, isn't it? Is that they have a lot of books. That's the number one thing.
Yeah, you've got to. I mean, there are two things that I really think are important, and one of them is diversity. I'm getting a bit into the ebook market. I'll be producing Digital Magic and Chasing the Bard will both be available as ebooks. And they've got new covers, and I've done a little bit more editing on them. So I'm dabbling in the self-publishing side of things. And then, of course, because I've got Ace and Harper Voyager as my two publishers, I enjoy that diversity of having, you know, two different things. And also I'm doing sort of, I guess you would call it supernatural fantasy and steampunk. So two different areas there. And I think that's there. One of the authors that I admire, CJ Sherry, who's, she's been writing since the 70s, maybe even earlier. She has a lot of different worlds, a lot of different properties, as they call them now. And I've always kind of modeled what I want to do on what she's done. But using social media and stuff to help me along the way. And it's kept me busy and active, and I'm still not planning to get out of the podcasting arena anytime soon. I'm currently doing three podcasts. I've got finishing off Digital Magic, and I'm still doing Erotic a la Carte, and I've got Chronicles of the Order, which is the short story anthology. So, wow, if I stop and think about that, I also start to freak out a bit. So I'll be glad when Digital Magic finishes and things are a little bit calmer. But my free time is fairly limited, as you can imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, it sounds like you're doing amazing things, Pip. So, you know, thanks for coming on the show.
I had a spare 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So where can people find you and Geist online?
Well, the Geist website is booksoftheorder.com, and my website is pjballantine.com, and that's got links to all my websites, all my podcasts, everything Pip related. It's like the hub. I dare not spend any other time telling you where else to go, because, you know, time is limited.
you're everywhere. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Pip, and good luck with the book.
Lovely to be here.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.